I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm Brittany Pacheco.
And I have a boner for Storm.
I'm Marcy Gonzalez.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement. Let's just get into this. That sent me, Frank. My God.
Sorry.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We're here today to discuss episode 3 of X-Men 97, the series that continues the story that we saw in the X-Men animated series from the 90s. But before we get started on that episode, I just want to bring up something that Brittany, you actually noticed this over the weekend. Obviously, it's a sad, very sad moment. The tragic death of Gen V actor Chance Perdomo. He was in Gen V. Of course, he played Andre Anderson. And he died in a motorcycle accident. He was only 27 years old. Brittany, you were the first one to see it out of our group. I mean, I was stunned when I saw it. Give me your thoughts on it.
I just want to give credit where credit's due. It was actually George who put it in the group chat. Oh, and okay. I did that Deadline and Variety confirmed that the news about Chance's death was indeed true. So, yeah, that was really, really sad to hear just because of how explosive Gen V was in the sense of bringing these actors that I wasn't familiar with all too well, and you know, particularly Chance. I knew he previously was on the Netflix show Sabrina, and people just had like rave reviews about the show, let alone his performance. So to hear about his tragic passing at such a young age, I mean, and really like age, it's kind of like irrelevant at this point, just because when you hear something like that, it's just so, so shocking and so, so sad. So, you know, he had a lot of talent to offer. And because of how his character in Gen V was left off with the rest of the cast, it's really like, what are they going to do? Are they going to recast his character, or are they going to kill off his character? And if they're going to do the latter, like, how are they going to do it? It, you know, I would feel like they need to do it tastefully. I kind of will try to liken it to that of losing Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa in Black Panther. You know, that was a very well done send-off for the character. And I just hope that the producers and showrunners and such are going to treat Chance's passing with respect, of course, when it comes to the show.
Yeah, no, I couldn't said it better myself. Frank, you watched the show. What were your initial thoughts about his passing?
I mean, kind of just to add on to what Brittany said, I mean, first off, condolences to his family and his loved ones. I mean, it's a life that's gone, that's does not perish. So first and foremost, that's something that I don't take lightly. I mean, such a tragic ending to what seemed to be a beautiful beginning to this young man's career. I mean, things were going very, very well for him and for the show and everything, but just prayers to his family and, you know, prayers to his loved ones. I mean, that's not tough. I mean, that's very, very tough. I mean, a mother lost a son, a father lost a son. He has siblings. I don't know if he had kids or not, but just a tremendous loss, you know, for such a young, so young, man. So I'm not even worried about the show. I'm just concerned about his family. I mean, I think all that would take care of itself, you know, when the time comes. But it's just when things like this happen in Hollywood, we often as humans we become so dehumanized and selfish to the point where like, well, what about this project, or what about what happens next? And we tend to like take out the human element of like there's a soul no longer on this earth now. So you know, I just hope that his family finds peace and closure moving forward. So
yeah, you know, and you're totally right about, you know, the show doesn't matter at this point, but I just want to give the information about the show, because the first season was very popular, and like you, Brittany, said I mean, for me, this actor, I'd never seen him, much like the whole cast. The whole cast was basically fresh faces. I'd never seen any of these actors, honestly, and the only name I knew was Patrick Schwarzenegger, because his last name's Schwarzenegger. I didn't know who he was either. So it was a very young cast, a very close-knit cast from what I've seen on social media. And the only information they have going forward is just that they were getting ready to start production on season 2. And now that's been suspended indefinitely. So who knows when that'll be. Obviously, that's not important. But again, it's a very popular show. It was renewed like after, I think, the second episode aired, or maybe after the first. I mean, it was very quick. And, you know, it's a part of the Boys universe. The Boys is obviously very popular on Amazon Prime. But we won't be getting a season two of Gen V for a while, it sounds like. And, you know, the way they ended season one of Gen V, those Gen V characters who survived season one, you know, the characters who survived, they're probably going to be in season four of The Boys that comes out in June. So he might be in season four. He probably is. I would think so. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But obviously, you know, our condolences to him and his family. Marcy, I don't think have you watched Gen V?
No, but I did watch Sabrina. So that's where I knew him from. Yeah. But yeah. It's odd story all around, like everybody mentioned, so young, like 27 is very, very young. And I think one of his last posts on his Instagram had been a picture of a motorcycle. I don't know if that's the motorcycle that he was in an accident with, but yeah, it's just really tragic.
Yes. So once again, RIP to Chance Perdomo. There's no real great way to transition from this to the X-Men. Although, you know, the characters in Gen V are very much similar to the characters in the X-Men. It's kind of, I think that the Gen V characters are kind of like a, you know, a analog or whatever to the X-Men characters. So let's get to our review of episode 3 of X-Men 97. Episode titled Fire Made Flesh. Now, is it called Fire Made Flesh because the Goblin Queen is so damn hot? Is that why they titled this? Because, like, she is. I mean, we're talking, like, Jessica Rabbit levels of animated excitement for me. Frank, I want to go to you real quick, because last week you pretty much predicted everything that happened in episode 3. You explained last week after we did episode 1 and 2. What are your thoughts on the third episode, Fire Made Flesh?
My thoughts were, I'm surprised it happened so quickly. I thought it would be a little bit more spanned out over a few episodes. Yeah. They came to the conclusion of that character pretty quickly.
Yeah.
In a 35-minute episode. So I was surprised by how quickly that wrapped up. I think we talked about this earlier, Justin, off camera. The show, even though it's 10 episodes, the show is doing, they're really focusing on, like, moving things along very quickly and getting through storylines and getting through, like, you know, comic book storylines from the books. So yeah, I was just surprised how fast it moved. But I mean, I knew that was going to happen. I knew Sinister was going to show up. I knew that was a, you know, a clone of Jean Grey. But no, she's hot. I mean, That clone, man, is, if I'm Cyclops, bro, I'm not so sad. If I'm Cyclops, I'm thinking of, like, could make this a family thing. I mean, I don't. Right. I mean, what's the problem with that? Like, I already got a baby by her. We might as well just make it a group, a family atmosphere. What's the problem?
Yeah, you know, I would have titled this episode two Jean Greys, one Cyclops. That's what I would have called this. A nod to the Two Girls, One Cup video from years ago. Marcy, sorry to, like, bring that up and then try to introduce you to this episode. But what did you think about how quickly we found out the clone's name? What's her name again? It's Madeline
Pryor.
Madeline Pryor.
A.K.A. the Goblin Queen.
Yeah. So Marcy, what are your thoughts on the Goblin Queen and just how quickly the storyline kind of played out?
Now, I'm glad Frank gave us kind of a lowdown last week, so I kind of knew what to expect, and it kind of pieced together pretty quickly for me. So, yeah, this was a great episode. You know, could have also been titled, Will the Real Jean Grey Please Stand Up? Because that's pretty much what the episode was about. Goblin Queen, yes, I second, I third. She is hot, like, she was just giving body the whole episode. And I was just kind of sitting there watching the episode eating Teddy Grahams. And I was like, I should probably stop eating these cookies. And then I could probably buy, like, this costume for Halloween. So that will be my goal, to stop eating some Teddy Grahams and look like the Goblin Queen for Halloween.
So, Teddy Grahams are the shit, though. Like, I'm not going front. That's right. I mean, they're pretty fucking good.
But if you don't eat the Teddy Grahams, you can cosplay as the Goblin Queen. So that's, there you go. And then afterwards, you go back to the Teddy Grahams. Brittany, what are your thoughts on the Goblin Queen and just how the episode kind of played out?
I will fourth or fifth the hotness that is the Goblin Queen, Madeline Pryor. Very voluptuous, which is kind of funny because I remember when we first saw the trailer for X-Men 97 that it seemed the animation had been changed to where these female characters weren't so curvy and so, you know, voluptuous and whatnot. And then we get that. I'm like, okay. They're catering to the audience, it seems. So yeah, I'm with Marcy right here. Girl, I will stop eating Teddy Grahams with you because I saw that outfit. I'm like, that is Halloween goals. Like, I will find the red wig or dye my hair red. I will do it all. There was one point in the show where Goblin Queen is, you know, talking to the X-Men and she's sitting in her chair and I immediately went to Basic Instincts with the crossing of the legs. And I'm like, oh, I can't be the only one who feels this. Frank, my boy, back me up. Okay.
I thought Sharon Stone was worse than that. I really did. It was quite. And speaking of like body goals and like voluptuous and on this episode, Jean Grey / Madeline Pryor got a black auntie or great grandma down the family line. Like, where did that ass come from, fam? Like, that wasn't there in episode 1 and 2. Maybe she was pregnant and was just hiding. I don't know, but like, man, I know what it was. It's the baby. Oh, the baby gave her that figure. That's what it is.
Oh my!
She got snatched like right after she gave birth to him. Was like, wait, you just gave birth. How are you so snatched again? Yeah. That was unrealistic.
Listen, I've never given birth, and I never will. I want to be snatched like that. Like, can an animator like go and make me snatch? Like, that'd be like, thank you. And also, if you can make me just a little bit taller, thank you. Anyway, that being said, this episode was fire though. Like, it was straight fire. Quite literally, there was like an inferno going on by the hands of Madeline Pryor. So I think from start to finish, the show was just like giving everything. It was twisted. It was like, for me, it made me cringe at some points. And this is an animation, right? So for it to give off the vibes and for me to feel a certain way, they've done their job and they've done their job well. And I'm hooked on this show. I'm hooked on the show. I know George isn't here with us. We've been trying, y'all, to encourage him to watch the show. And he's just like, he's not there. He's not there. But I told him, I said, if you get to episode 3, you're going to be hooked. Like, because that's
picture of Goblin Queen.
That episode was everything, yo. Like, it was fire.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you mentioned Inferno. And Frank, I want to throw it to you about this because I know I've heard people this week talking about how the Inferno storyline is a big part of the comics. And they kind of just, like you said, in one episode kind of took care of that and with the Goblin Queen and like the hellish, nightmarish reality she gives the other X-Men in her transformation from the clone to this Goblin Queen. What do you know about the Inferno storyline? Or is that a big storyline in the X-Men comic books?
It is. I need to go back and read it as an adult because I know there's a lot of innuendos that went over my head as a 10-year-old when I first read that comic book. But it's pretty much all the dark alter ego of Jean Grey, like very sexually suggested, very she has the ability to like bring out the desires of others. And while she infiltrates the X-Men during that time, she does that. And she does that with Gambit and Rogue, and she does that with Wolverine and Jean, or Wolverine and her, or however you want to say it. And it breaks up it almost tears apart the X-Men until they figure out who she really is. Outside the Phoenix Saga, it's a distant second or third, but
Right.
But outside of the Phoenix Saga, is one of the most jarring events that happened to the X-Men is when they find out Madeline Pryor is Madeline Pryor and not Jean Grey. Because, I mean, Cyclops had a whole relationship with her. He had a baby with her. Like, and what, and the ramifications of that comic book, a baby came out of it. And Cyclops and Jean Grey never had kids on the main timeline. Now they've had kids, like there's a child that comes out called Rachel Summers, who is the incarnation of the Phoenix Force from another timeline. And that, and it has DNA of Jean Grey and Cyclops, but that's from another timeline. So even at, after that whole storyline of Madeline Pryor that wraps up, there's still emotional damage from that aftermath, because Madeline Pryor gave Cyclops something that Jean Grey has given her, or it's so far in this comic book series has not given him, which is a child. So it was very damaging and affected a lot of people, primarily Wolverine and Cyclops. So and Jean. So yeah, the Inferno is it's pretty much the deepest, darkest desires that each mutant had in that storyline pretty much comes into fruition.
Yeah, we're gonna dig into that here in a second, but I want to go around the horn and just kind of get everybody's thoughts on these kind of quick hitter questions. But Frank, I want to start with you because I think you obviously are gonna have the most insight of all of us. So okay, here's my questions. When do you think the genes were swapped? The Jean Greys were swapped out. Do you think that Scott married the clone, or did he marry our actual Jean Grey? And which one of them was the Phoenix? I mean, I don't know that we know those answers, but I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, what do you think about those three questions? Like, when were they swapped? Did he marry the clone? And who was the Phoenix?
And these are all great questions. 30 years later, those questions are still haven't been answered.
Okay.
We don't know when it happened. For me, I would say after the Phoenix Saga, because I don't think Madeline Pryor has the same level of power that Jean Grey, because Jean Grey is still more powerful than her, because she's a clone, so she's a lesser version of Jean Grey. So even during the Phoenix Saga, I don't think Madeline Pryor could project the kind of power that she that was projected in that Phoenix Saga combined with the Phoenix, that Jean Grey is combined with the Phoenix.
I got you.
So I think it was after the Phoenix Saga. Maybe at the wedding, maybe prior to them getting married, she got switched. But it's never clear. We don't know when it happened. We don't know. I forgot how it happened, but the timeline, like when that was never discussed. And kind of in a way, that's kind of a genius way by the writers to leave that ambiguous and leave it up to the interpretation of the reader.
Yeah, no, good point. Marcy, I want to throw the question to you. Kind of mix it up a little bit. Okay, so we don't really know maybe the answers to these questions. But I want to get your opinion. Which one do you think is more interesting? Scott Summers, aka Cyclops, marrying his true love Jean Grey, who's fellow founder of the X-Men, or is it more interesting if he actually married the clone?
I think it would be more interesting for the storyline if he married the clone, because then I think that could bring up more friction and more issues for him and the real Jean, I guess, down the line, because yeah, that's a clone of me, but you married someone else and you had a baby with someone else. Like that could bring up a lot of like stickiness and drama. And then even Wolverine was like, hey, like Jean, like, you know, focus on like your actual memories, like I will help you. And then she's like, oh, you feel all this about me? Like he was ready to like swoop in and like comfort her. So good job, Wolverine, I guess.
Yeah,
so,
like, he was.
Yeah, like taking that opportunity. So I think, yeah, I think that makes it more interesting if Scott married or had the baby with the clone and not the actual Jean. And I think it was great also at the end of this episode where Madeline and Jean were just kind of like talking and they're like, we don't know which one like was the Phoenix. We don't know who married Scott. We don't know who had the baby. So, all right. Well, we do know who had the baby because we saw it, but it's even ambiguous to them. And I think that is also just something I don't think I could get over that. If I knew I had a clone, I'd be like, wait, this is like way too freaking weird. I can't deal with this.
And not just a clone, like the clone has the memories of Jean Grey. Like everything that Jean Grey knows, the clone knows. That's the weird part. Like, the clone didn't know she was a clone. That's how cold of a geneticist Sinister is, to the point where she didn't even know. And what's even more crazy is that Wolverine is one of the most intuitive mutants on the planet. He can sniff out anything. He couldn't even sniff out that was a clone the whole time that Madeline was living in the X Mansion with them. That's scary. Wolverine can sniff out anything. For that to go under Wolverine's nose is amazing.
Very good point. Brittany, I want to get your thoughts. Same question that I posed to Marcy. What's more interesting, Scott marrying the real Jean Grey or the clone?
I'm just going to settle it this way. Keep them both in the mansion. You give one to Scott, which is going to be the clone, because obviously he had a child with clone. Right. He's got feelings. He's got attachments. We have no way of knowing how long ago that switch was made, right? Yep. I mean, 9 months. It definitely have to be, you know, more than 9 months. But let the real Jean Grey go to my boy Wolverine. Like, let him fulfill his fantasies. Let him fulfill his dreams. He calls her Jeannie, for God's sakes. Like, let him have his girl. Let him have his girl. Scott has his. I don't give a shit if it's the real one or not. He has his. I have feelings about Scott too. We're going to get to that eventually. However, you know, let Scott have the Madeline Pryor and let Wolverine have Jean. Like, let that be the end of it.
Yeah.
And scene.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's all obviously very interesting also. Let's backtrack just a little bit though. So let's talk about how the episode begins. And I love how Morph calls the clone Jean Doe. I thought that was pretty funny to call the clone that.
But
I really enjoyed how Beast, he determines who's the clone, who's the real one. I love his thing. He says scientists like artists have signatures to their work. I know who cloned Jean. A man so dark and twisted that he can be described as nothing other than sinister. I laughed out loud because obviously I knew it was Mr. Sinister. But Frank, I want to get your thoughts on the fact that that Sinister, whenever he reveals that he cloned, the clone finds out because Sinister tells the clone, like, I cloned you. He's like, I made you. I baked you, which gross, right?
He goes, baking? You can call me daddy.
I baked you. Frank, what are your thoughts on that?
That should give me pedo vibes, bro. That was weird. Like, bro, like, yes, you're the creation, you're the mass scientist. Did you have to sound that creepy, bro? Did you have to sound that creepy?
Yes, he needed to sound sinister. Like, I mean, duh.
That wasn't sinister. That was pedo. That was weird. You've been alive for 300 years, and that's the best line you come up with of like unveiling your ultimate plan. Like, that's what you would decide to stick with. Like, come on.
I mean, he's from the 1800s. Give the guy a break. I don't know.
He's a geneticist. He literally evolves throughout the times. But
that don't mean he picks up the right lingo. I mean, I don't know. He's not a linguist. He's a geneticist.
And as he tells her,
yeet at all. I'm done.
He says, every cell in your body belongs to me. You have no choice. So, yeah, like Marcy was talking about last week.
It was way worse than the comic books. They thought with the kids for this episode, because it got dark in the comic books as far as like when he said he owned her. In the comic books, he showed that he owned her. It was very, very. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Oh. Did she really have to call him daddy in the comics, though?
That part I don't remember.
Oh, God.
Don't answer that question.
No one answered that question. Marcy. Thoughts?
Yeah. Creepy, weird, but also he reminds me of like those good morning, beautiful textures, because he even said, like, it's time to wake up, my queen. I'm like, okay, like, that's not creepy at all. So, yeah, definitely lots of things that we don't like to see in 2024. So, you know, Diddy vibes, I guess, yeah. right now. Yeah.
But this is 1997, so it's acceptable. No, I'm just I'm being stupid.
Yeah. 97 Mace was still in the picture. So, like, I don't know where he is now, but he was definitely still a part of the crew. Going back to Sinister, I do think it's interesting because Sinister's real name is Nathan Essex, correct, Frank? And then I like how Scott and Jean's, or, you know, clone Jean, their
Madeline.
Son, yeah, Madeline, their son is named Nathan, who, of course, becomes Cable. Spoiler alert for Deadpool 2 and definitely for this series later on. Is that intentional that they chose that? Did they choose the name because they were kind of made to choose that name? Or they choose the name because in the future, or they've already met the future version of their son? Because, like, the clone even remarks of, like, of course it's Nathan. Like, how could I forget? And it's like, that was a very, like, I don't know, kind of a jarring kind of part for me, because I'm like, is she remembering something, or is it, you know, very suggested by Mr. Sinister? This is the name of the perfect mutant child.
No, that was just happenstance there, because even Jean Grey, well, Madeline doesn't know that that's Cable, or Jean doesn't know that's Cable. That's just something that Cable did a really good job of, like, keeping that secret, because with the apocalypse in the future, he didn't, him being alive and him existing, it plays a huge part of Cable and Bishop and the X-Men defeating the apocalypse in the future, because if he's not born, then mutant kind of is all lost. So he does a good job of keeping that secret to himself, even when he goes back in time to aid the X-Men against the Friends of Humanity and the mutant haters.
Yeah, so Cable, aka Nathan Summers, is the John Connor of this storyline.
Yeah, pretty much.
The impact of Terminator 2 back then was huge on the X-Men, apparently, too. Or maybe they ripped off X-Men for Terminator. I'm not sure which one came first as far as that storyline, but it's a very similar storyline.
It is, because Cable debuted in the 80s, like early 80s, but so did Terminator 1. So I don't know which came first.
Yeah, good point. That's a good question. Marcy, I want to talk a little bit more about the Goblin Queen, because she has some really great lines whenever she becomes the evil queen. She says, "Mommy's busy." I like when she's, like, calling out Scott. She's like, "I knew you'd follow, Scott. It's all you do. Just ask the professor." Which is a shot, the fact that he wasn't chosen to lead the X-Men, that Magneto, who's their, you know, mostly enemy / frenemy, becomes the leader. What did you think about, like, obviously she's, you know, very, like, sensual, but she's also, there's a lot of sass there too.
Yeah, that's what I liked about her too. Not only did they make her beautiful and hot and sexy or whatever, a temptress, what have you, but they made her sassy. They gave her some great lines. I think she's all around, like, toxic, and you can't help but love her. Like, I wasn't ever, like, rooting against her, like, oh, Goblin Queen, like, I hope they vanquish you. I was like, oh, like, okay, like, get it, girl. Like, you know, she's one of those villains that I could root for. So I really enjoyed just kind of seeing her, and then just seeing all of the chaos that she could bring to all of these very powerful mutants, and kind of, like, take them to, like, their most vulnerable and emotionally weakened state, just because of everything that she was able to project and show them and, like, bring them to their knees.
Yeah, it's good transition. That's speaking of that, Brittany, let's talk about the kind of nightmare scenarios that play out for the X-Men via the Goblin Queen. Just pick your favorite one, and we'll go from there.
Oh, you know, I got to talk about my boy Gambit. I love everything about Gambit, especially with this very, very, very defined Cajun accent, right? And how he refers to himself in the third person, and how it irks him that Rogue and Magneto are going to be training all day you know, next day, and he's like, you know, Gambit gonna find her, go look for her, you know. And when he goes into the room within the mansion, he's just kind of like, what the hell is happening? It's like these vines, tree type things. It's almost kind of gives swampy type vibes, right? Which would be semi-appropriate if you hail from Louisiana. However, what he sees is a very little clothing on Rogue and Magneto, but they too have a very, like, they're fusing into one another. Their skin is kind of stretched, but they're just like kind of absorbing each other. And that right there is what made me absolutely cringe, because I still can't fathom Rogue and Magneto together. And for Gambit to witness this, he's just like, mon dieu, like, oh my God, like, this is what is happening here. What sort of hell did I just walk into? And so that kind of setting the tone for everything else that we were going to see with Morph, seeing a version of Wolverine with, I'm trying to think what else was happening with Beast. Beast opened the door to somewhere, and like this green blob of, I don't know what it is. Crazy. I mean, just absolute craziness that was happening in that mansion. And like I said, with the Inferno that kind of was bringing them down, and seeing all these winged demon like creatures, and Beast makes a reference to Dante's Inferno. Classic. Y'all need to go read it, of course. However, it was wild. I'm thinking, oh my God, if this aired in the 90s, like when we were kids, I think it would have definitely been lost. I mean, I speak just from a non-comic book reader. I mean, Frank, he read these comics as a kid, but he said it himself, to go and reread it as an adult, because you're missing some, you know, subtext and what have you. I feel like having that subject matter be brought into this show as we're adults is very well done. But to see the level of twistedness that this episode offered was insane. And like I said, I'm here for it. Like, I don't typically like horror or things that are like thriller-like, but man, this was done just so, so well. But it was the Rogue and Magneto like fusing into each other. Cringe, gross.
Yeah, Morph had a great line. He's trying to give, you know, Gambit a hard time, and he's saying, oh, they're in the danger room like every day training. And he's like, Rogue's really trying to test her stamina with the new boss, or trying to up her stamina or whatever. Brittany mentioned like the clothing that, or the lack of clothing that Rogue and Magneto are wearing in this nightmare scenario. Is that a reference to the Savage Land? It seems like they're wearing like jungle type clothing, loincloths, whatever. If you could just talk about that, and then also the shot that Rogue takes at Gambit with, I found myself a real man. Like, just brutal for our Cajun card carrying guy.
That boy on to something, man. Yeah, that was a homage to how the Savage Land storyline that I talked about last week. And the writers did a great job of like putting these little Easter eggs to him. Like, you know what, these comic book nerds gonna catch this if I put this in here regarding the costumes and the scantily clothed style that Magneto and Rogue had. But yeah, that was from the Savage Land storyline of how they met, because Rogue lost her powers and Magneto was kind of like her safe space at that time. So and how the show did it to where it made it seem like Madeline brought that out and like almost brought out a storyline that wasn't seen in the original series, but like kind of bring out the comic books to show you like how they briefly met and how this romance kicked off and continued on off and on, apparently, you know, off screen until this season. So yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh shit, they might do a flashback of the Savage Land. But you know, they didn't do a flashback, but it was still cool to see that glimpse of the clothes they had on to pay homage to that Savage Land storyline.
Yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs in this show. A lot of them that go over my head, and we're gonna touch on those here in a little bit. But Marcy, I want to get your thoughts on Morph is an interesting character, just in general. But in this episode, that character kind of really drives a lot of the storyline. In his like nightmare scenario, he, you know, encounters his good buddy Wolverine in the shower. Now I ask you, the way he reacts, is he in love with Wolverine? Do you think we're supposed to think that?
Oh, good question.
Because Wolverine says something to the effect of like, he's like, we all know Morph. Like we all know, or I know, I've seen the way you look at me, or it's kind of like implied. I can't remember the exact line, but it definitely hints at that Morph is interested in Wolverine more than just being friends.
That's a little bit of what I got from it too. So I feel like that could be valid, especially in the 90s, especially if you are a mutant. And I think it's, if that's where they're going, I think the show is making a good point of how LGBTQ people may feel, not only like now, but like they must have felt back in the 90s where things were, when things were a little bit rougher. And then again, just kind of like that feeling of quote unquote society telling you that there is something wrong with you because you're a mutant, or telling you that there's something wrong with you because you are LGBTQ. I think that's an interesting point, if that's the point that they're making. But yeah, I did, when I saw that the first time, I was like, wait, what? Like, what happened? Why is this your nightmare? But it was a great just kind of lead in into the rest of just everybody else's nightmare. And I also loved that Cyclops' nightmare was, you fucked up. You had a baby. You like failed to have a baby with like the correct Jean Grey. Like, I love that that was
oops, yeah.
Nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was pretty great too. Brittany, sticking on Morph here, you know, in the storyline, Morph helps, you know, they find out that Mr. Sinister's behind this. In the OG series, there's a big storyline with Morph being like mind controlled by Sinister, and Morph knows where Sinister's labs are, so he leads the X-Men, two of them, to find Nathan, who's been infected with this like techno organic virus, which is very cool, which will probably hit America in 2027 probably. My question for you is, there's, you know, Morph, obviously just by the name, he can morph into anything. We actually see him morph into what he looked like in the early 90s series, the OG series. What did you think about that? Because he is the one character who has a drastically different look. Yes, Storm's hair is different. Yeah. Bishop's hair is slightly different. Every other character looks virtually the same, except for Morph. He looks like a different comic book version that came after the animated series. What did you think about how we got to see his character from the early series?
It was a great callback. I mean, Frank has talked about how there's multiple kind of storylines that have been touched with this episode alone, right? And so not everything can necessarily be like a flashback or a memory or that kind of thing, right? But for him to actually physically transform back to what we originally saw him as was interesting. But, you know, noticing the really like dark circles under his eyes and what have you, like he's like more, I say keep saying he, but I want to say that the character's non-binary for this show. Morph's character has gone through a lot, obviously, it goes without saying. And probably the trauma that was experienced during that time obviously leaves a permanent mark. And for Morph, that's going to be exhibited by the appearance that they take, don't come at me. But with that, it kind of just drives that point of really no one knows better than Morph with the extent of Sinister's cruelty and talent. I say talent, but you know, don't take that positive. But that was, it was great to kind of see that, because for those who initially were very confused as to the character in that first episode, I didn't immediately recognize Morph when in the first episode. So I'm just like, who the heck is this? And then it's like, oh, wait, this is Morph. Like, this is okay. Why? Like, what? Why? But to see that was nice. Also, if Morph has known the location of Sinister's lair, why are you gatekeeping that information, dude? Like, why wouldn't you like say something earlier?
I have a rebuttal to that. And this kind of goes back to like the original series. So literally in the very first episode, The Night of the Sentinels Part One, Morph is believed to be killed. Like he gets shot by the Sentinel blast.
Right.
And they lose him in that battle. So
he's left behind. Yeah.
He's left behind because of the heavy hell of gunfire from the Sentinel. So
right.
For two seasons, we don't see him. Like he's out of there. He's out of there. And then like in season three, we find out that Sinister found him and pretty much brought him in and pretty much reprogrammed it. I'm sorry, my dog is tap dancing, bending back. I apologize. But
it's okay, CJ. We love you.
But he literally was gone for 2 years. Sinister finds him. He pretty much wipes his memory and turns into like an assassin. So, and while he wipes his memory, well, he doesn't wipe his memory. He kind of like mind controls him. So Morph knows what's going on, but he can't control it. So like he's against his will, which Sinister does that often with a lot of like heroes from the comic books. So fast forward to now, the X-Men save him. But he's still not, I guess, healed all the way. He still has remnants of what happened to him in the previous series. So fast forward to now, he's still emotionally damaged from that. He wants no parts of going back to that because he knew he hurt a lot of people, including his own comrades within the X-Men. So withholding to that information was more so of like, I don't want to go back there because I know what I did. I've killed people. I did things I wasn't proud of. I nearly took out my own teammates. And I think him trying to wipe the slate clean and move on from that was his way of like trying to subconsciously shut that part out and not go back to like trying to get payback on Sinister. So
I definitely can understand that for sure. For someone who experienced, like I said, the level of trauma that Morph experienced, why would you go back to the thing that put you through all that? Totally and completely understand that. However, it's got an army of superpower friends.
Yep.
And I think they would like to stick up for their friend and retaliate, right? But that's fine. The story has not played out the way that I would have wanted it to play out, but it was just kind of like watching the episode for the first time, and I'm like, dude, why would you withhold that information if you've known this for a while and say, hey guys, you remember that guy Sinister who's like, you know, Sinister, let's go after him, or y'all can go after him, I'll just like sit back and just wait, right?
Fear, because even when thing. Fear, man, fear,
I totally understand
everything.
That.
Yeah,
totally understand that, but then I kind of have to counter that, because when Morph divulged that information and the team went to the location, Morph was there. Like, Morph was there barging in with the rest of them. So,
he's not going to leave his team behind. He's not going to stay at the mansion, just chill while his friends are fighting, you know, to save, you know, Nathan's life and Jean's and protect Jean. I mean, he's gonna at the end of the day, he's an X-Men, but I mean, all these X-Men have fears, man. I mean,
sure,
just because you're a superhero doesn't mean you're not impervious to failure. And
couldn't
and
agree fear, more. So. Couldn't agree more. I just feel like it just seems sus.
You gotta watch
someone who's I understand. Yeah. I'm just saying, for someone who's coming in like totally brand new, never watched the series as a kid, and has no knowledge whatsoever of these characters and the storylines, it just seems a tad bit sus. Like, oh, that's really convenient that you would now divulge that information. Like, are you working from the inside? Like, you know what I mean? I like to play both sides.
Well, I mean, I think once they found out it was Sinister, he did divulge information. Because at the point, we don't know that Jean's even alive until the end of episode two. So at that point, it probably didn't click to him that Sinister could be behind this, because they had defeated Sinister in the regular series, and he had disappeared. Well, he had escaped. So when the whole thing with Man and Pride, the X Mansion happened, that's when he put two and two together. Like, yeah, it's probably who I think it is. But I don't think he sat on it for that long. I think once Jean Grey reappeared, that's when it clicked to him. Like, okay, I know who's behind this. And he was pretty quickly to divert information once got there.
Yeah, for sure. Just speak up sooner, my dude. Speak up sooner.
So, Brittany, you bring up an interesting point with the series, because, like you said, you did not watch the OG series. And Morrissey, I want to get your thoughts on this, because this show is doing very well. It is one of the most watched series every week. I mean, it's only been out for 2 weeks. It's like a top five most watched show on all of streaming. It's got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got the audience score is actually lower than the critical score, which I think is insane. The critical score is 98. The audience score is 93. So I'm like, it's never that way. But as kind of someone who's kind of jumping into this, how do you think the show is done as far as do you feel like you need to go back and watch the first five seasons of the OG series? Or do you feel like through three episodes, obviously we have Frank here, who's a great resource, who knows all about this series and the characters and the comic books and all that stuff. That's awesome. But when you're watching these episodes, do you feel like, oh yeah, they're doing a good job of telling me I understand this world. I understand these characters pretty much.
Yeah. Great question. So I think I didn't feel like I needed to go back, but I did actually start watching the original series just because you all made it just sound so great. But having Frank as a resource was really great last week, because then it really helped click everything that happened in this episode just super quickly for me. So I think they've been doing a good job of just getting everybody up to speed. If you don't have that background knowledge of the original series or just X-Men in general, nobody ever saw the live action X-Men movies that came out, what was it, the early 2000s? So I think they've been doing a good job. And it's not to where they're backtracking or giving too much information to where people that have already seen the OG series are like, oh, this is just a rehash. We want new content or material.
Yeah. As somebody who did go back and watch the original series, I think they're doing a great, I feel like I didn't really have to watch it. I'm glad I did, because obviously hosting this podcast, I want to know as much as I can about the subjects. So I don't sound like a complete moron, but, I do feel like it's very rewarding, because they're paying off things that were in the original series. They're doing it in a from a 90s cartoon to a 2024 kind of it's still animated, but it's definitely more mature. It's definitely more modern, even though it's based in the 90s. So I think they're doing a great job with it so far. Frank, earlier I talked about Easter eggs, and you're the only one on this group that can answer these questions and could help me with this stuff. But I want to touch on some of the things that we saw in this episode. I mentioned earlier that Morph, he said he gives the clone the name Jean Doe, and then he turns into a woman with six arms and he says, all in favor, and she's got her hands up. Who is this character? And are we going to, do you think we'll see this character more in the future? Or is it just kind of like an Easter egg thing Easter egg, because, we're around Easter time. It just passed. Mm-hmm. But, who do you think this character, who is this person? I mean, I'm sure you know, so let us know.
Yeah, I can't remember her name, but she's, there's a character, remember the show Mojo?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Marvel show Mojo. So that character is the guardian of Mojo. She's an assassin. I can't remember her name, but she's from Mojo World.
Is it dimension. Spiral?
Spiral, there Spiral? You go. That's, okay. That's looks, Spiral, okay. Yeah, with the six arms. Yeah, that's Mojo's bodyguard. I don't know how he was able to morph into her, because I don't think they've ever met or came across each other's crosshairs. So, but yeah, that's Spiral from the Mojo World.
Okay. I had to look it up just to figure it out, but I figured you knew a ton about it. The next Easter egg is we see in Bishop's nightmare scenario, he sees a woman. And she calls him, she says, she's like, you're my brother or brother. Who is this person?
That is Bishop's sister from the from the future. Okay. God, what was her name too?
I couldn't find her name, so not...
Yeah, that's his sister. I could look it up, but she was in the original series though. She was in season one when Bishop goes back into from the future to the present to stop Gambit of killing the president, which was technically Mystique. That's who that was. That's Bishop's little sister. She's also a time traveler. I think her name is Shard, if I remember correctly.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, I think her name is Shard. Shard Bishop, I believe that's who it is. That's Shard, yeah.
And then the final Easter egg that I noticed is whenever the Goblin Queen kind of takes over Morph and controls Morph, Morph turns into a female character with blonde hair and a Russian accent. Who is this character? Do you remember,
I can answer that.
You do? Who is it?
That's Rasputina, a.k.a. Magic with a K.
Oh, magic. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm totally spacing on the first name. It's Ileana Rasputina, aka Magic. And I did a quick search on that because I figured, Justin, that was gonna be your sister, next question. Right? Huh?
In the class of the sister?
I think so.
That's Magic. That's Colossus's baby sister.
Right. Okay. So, and in a quick research, it says Magic is a member of both the X-Men and Ally team with New Mutants. And after becoming under the Goblin Queen's influence, Morph changes into the demonic alter ego known as Dark Child.
She's a Rasputin. That's Colossus' little sister.
Cue in Rasputin. Sorry.
Yeah, the Russian accent makes sense with Colossus. So that's
For sure.
It's interesting because these are kind of deep cuts though. You know, you've got to be really locked in. And I think she was in the original series also.
She was a younger child. She was younger. Okay. I don't think her powers had manifested yet. There was a scene in season four when Colossus saves his little sister from being ran over by the that's Magic as she was a little kid. Her powers hadn't quite manifested at that point just yet. Oh yeah.
I mean, Colossus, he's not really in the series very much for being kind of one of the characters that people think of with the X-Men just because of his look. Yeah. He doesn't appear a ton in that series. I wonder if we're going to get much of him in this version. I hope we do, just to kind of mix it up.
And that's what's so interesting about the X-Men shows. Like, each X-Men show or cartoon has a slight incarnation of the X-Men team. Like, Wolverine, right, the X-Men, Iceman, Kitty Pryde, and Colossus are on the team. Bishop, Rogue, and Morph is not on the team. Well, Morph was made for the animated series. Morph is the original character just for the series.
Right.
He wasn't. Yeah. And for those who don't know, Morph was created because the original member, one of the older members of the X-Men, Thunderbird, Marvel lost the rights to that character at the time, so they couldn't use Thunderbird for the original series. So they created the character Morph.
The more you know. Ding, ding, ding.
And then, of course, like you said, created for the animated series, and then Morph did, become a member in the comic books also. So
yeah.
So that character continued on. I want to talk about Bishop's role in this episode. Basically, we learn that the child Nathan has this technovirus, and they can't save him in the current day, but they can give him to Bishop to time travel. And as Bishop points out, in his time band, there's only enough juice for him and the kid, which leads to this, this scene between Jean Grey, or I'm sorry, it's the clone, Madeline Pryor and Nathan, and Scott Summers, about, they don't want to send the kid, but they have no other choice. Cyclops, however, he doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to abandon his son like his father did to him. But then, after they decide that they have to let the kid go, he just leaves and says he can't be a part of this. So, Marcy, I want to get your thoughts. It seems he did kind of abandon his son. I don't know. It all happens in about
there's a few no kinda. Period. There's no kinda.
Yeah. he's just so hard. Like, he's so like hardcore. And then all of a sudden he's like, well, I can't be a part of this. I'm out.
Deadbeat vibes from Cyclops at that point. Yeah, he was very adamant of like, I don't want to abandon him like I was abandoned, and seemed true and caring. But then he was like, oh, like, screw this. I'm out. Like, first hint of like he didn't win, like get his way or, you know, whatever. He was just like, oh, peace. Like, I'm out. So, I mean, I don't have very high expectations for him now just because of that. And like, Jean clone probably shouldn't either.
Father of the Year award does not go to Scott Summers. That was the thing, like I told you at the top of the show, I had feelings towards Cyclops because of this specific scene. He goes all petulant child, drama queen of, I won't abandon my son, and he won't be abandoned. I promise. I won't do to him what my father did to me. It won't be like that. Don't you know what it feels like to be abandoned? And then just like walks away. Really? Really? Like, that was just so over the top, so like kind of typical of what I'd imagine a lot of male figures just stepping out on their kid and trying to be the victim in this whole process. Like, it's more about them than the child. And it's just like, dude, if your kid stays here, he's gonna die. You want that on your shoulders? You really want that on your shoulders when you had the ability to possibly find a cure for him in another timeline?
But I think that also plays a part too of like watching the original series and knowing Cyclops' past. His brother and him had one parachute, and his mom and dad, Alex and Scott, were all on a plane together. Their dad made the executive decision to give the parachute to Alex and Scott, and that was the last time Alex and Scott saw their parents alive. So he's dealing with that too, of like, I lost my parents. I'm the only person that's taking care of my big brother. You know, and in the comic book version of Scott too, is he didn't want kids for a long time because of what happened to him. He found out years later his father is alive. He's with the Shi'ar Empire. His mother's really dead, but his father's alive. So he's dealing with the daddy issues there. And he thought that he was with the love of his life. Come to find out it wasn't the love of his life. It was a clone of the love of his life, who has a baby with the clone of the love of his life. He's dealing with a lot of emotions. And then now you have a child with a clone that's not your love of your life. And now this child is sick. And you just got this kid. It's I think it's a lot of emotions swirling all at one time for Scott. And I think it's so much for him to handle. And at the end of the day, like, yeah, did he really abandon his kid? Like, he walked away. The kid went with Bishop. Like, it's like, what more could he have done? I mean, stay there and watch Bishop take the kid and time jump. Like, there was not much more he can do at that point.
I mean, I would say, like, the kid didn't even have clothes ever since he was born. The least they could have done was, like, buy him some baby clothes before he was born. Like, that was my thing. I was like, why is this baby still wearing a freaking diaper? Like, he's been alive for a couple hours. Like, can we get some clothes?
They didn't pack more diapers? They didn't pack any diapers. They didn't pack the wipes, the baby cream.
I mean, like, she had enough time to get snatched. Like, nobody had enough time to like put some clothes on this baby. He's got to be cold. But then also maybe like this is a great way for like Wolverine to get into his stepdaddy era, you know, be like, I'll never walk out on you. Like, that would be interesting.
Oh boy.
You know what though, in fairness to Cyclops, the mother of this child, Madeline Pryor, she bounces too. Right. She's like, I'm out of here. This is my chance at a life. And it's like, she's the mother. Like, and we're not giving her a hard time. By the way, Frank, I got to ask you, like, I love how in this episode, the real Jean Grey is like, they have like a kind of a heart to heart. And as they're parting, she's like, you know, take care of Jean. And she's like, actually, it's Madeline Pryor. And it's like, did she just make up the name? What's the origin of, like, did she just, like, you just pick that name? Like, I want to know, like, is there an origin for that? I assume there is in the comics, but, like, are we going to find that out, you think? Like, just let me know about the name Madeline Pryor.
The name, I don't know how the name is comprised. It's weird because in the comic books, Madeline shows up right at the same time Jean dies during the Phoenix Saga. So, and Scott, when Scott comes across her and meets her, he wants to believe so bad that it's Jean, and this doubt that it really is Jean. But he just, I mean, he's so distraught with the loss of Jean that he believes this is the Phoenix cosmic force, you know, created this body from Jean. So the Madeline Pryor name, I had no idea where that came from. That was a nifty creation by Mr. Sinister himself. But I saw McDork had made a good point too. Like, Jean's fucked up by this too. Like, she shows up. Yeah. Your man has a baby by a clone of you, a piece of you that's not you, but is you. And like, now this kid is left behind, and genetically is your kid, but not really, but kinda, but not really. And then now you have to, like, you know, tell this kid goodbye. So, you know, in the future, because whatever, there's no technology in the present day to save this kid. It's just a fucked up situation, man, that I don't think humans are built for. It's a lot to handle. You don't see this every day. This is not a typical Tuesday in New York. Like, this is something that you don't ever see. And it's such a creative storyline, man, because, like, I remember when it happened, and, like, I remember the comic book world was just, like, it was turned upside down, and, like, people posed the question, what would you do if you were Scott? What would you do if you was Jean? And, like, there is no wrong answer, because you've never seen this happen before in comic book history. But yeah, to answer your question, I have no idea where the name came from. No.
Okay. You know, this isn't... Go ahead, Brittany.
I was going to say, I'm glad Frank acknowledged the comment here in the live chat. Thanks to McDorks and Amber of All of Amber's Wands who've been hanging out with us here in the live chat. Appreciate you being here and sharing us your thoughts on the episode. And yeah, it's a compelling point about how Jean was kidnapped. Her, you know, her forever person went with another woman that looked exactly like her. She's dealing with it semi-okay. I mean, so right. far that we've seen, I mean, it left us on the cliffhanger where she and Madeline parted ways, and she goes back to, Jean goes back into the mansion to face Scott, and they're just kind of like looking at each other. So we don't know where they stand necessarily. But to Madeline's credit, she didn't like make a big scene like Scott did. It's saying, I'm not going to abandon my son. Don't you know what it feels like to be abandoned? Blah, blah. And she kept trying to reassure him. Your son's not going to be abandoned. He's not going to feel abandoned. I promise. And she has that telepathic wave with her son to pour out her heart and to let him know you are loved, you are wanted, and what have you. But we have to do the thing that's the most difficult thing we'll ever have to do, and that's give you a life that's better than what we can do here. It's the ultimate, like, one of the most ultimate sacrifices I'd imagine that a parent would ever have to make to save your child's life. And she did it. She watched her son go with Bishop to another time. And then she's like, okay, but what is there left for me? She tells Jean, if you know all the memories, then you know how long I've wanted to leave. I'm going to go find my own life. Like, she really, Madeline doesn't really have a purpose at this point. Like, I guess she really doesn't love Scott after all. So I don't know.
Guess not. I mean, in fairness to Scott, it's not like he hooked up with her mom or her best friend or her sister. He hooked up with her identical clone that was baked by Mr. Sinister.
Daddy.
Chef Boyardee cooked her up, and he was like, I'll have more. But so Brittany, you touched on something a second ago that I want to bring up. This is an animated show, but there's some cinematography going on in this show. And I love how we get the aftermath of everything, and we see Scott and Gene, the real Gene, in their bedroom, and the bedroom's all torn up, and they're looking at each other. Marcy, I want to throw this to you. This is like really setting up some like juicy kind of like soap opera stuff with what's going to happen with these two. And then of course, Wolverine, he's just dying to get back in. What do you think is going to happen? What do you hope is going to happen with this love triangle? That's, I don't know. Maybe it's not even a triangle anymore. Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know what you call it. Maybe it's like an isosceles triangle, like a smaller triangle. I don't know.
I don't know how much I can hope to see in like animated form. I think that's a little bit weird. I think graphic.
Just like, right, would you prefer that Jean goes with Wolverine, or does she stick with Scott, or do they work it out? What do you think happens in that?
I mean, you just got back. See which one you like best. Play the field a little bit. Like, I mean, even if she was my clone, I would be mad if my man couldn't tell that that wasn't me he was having sex with. So, like, there's a point against Scott for that. It's like, no, I still can't forgive that. Like, you should have known. Like, part of you should have known that that wasn't really me. So, I mean, try it out. Like, you know, who's nicer? Who's the best? Who's not going to just kind of like get mad and just walk away? Like, you know, have some fun.
I kind of second that. I'm not going to lie. Like, I mean, I think the slight difference is that I don't feel necessarily I could entirely be mad if my significant other like fucked up another girl that looks exactly like me and is my clone and is, you know, my DNA and memories and all that. But it's like, we're gonna leave that here because you still have a part of me. It's just not me, but I'm gonna go do me and figure stuff out on my own. And I think McDork's Christian, he said it well here. I would go solo just to figure myself out. Like, I'm kind of giving an out, so I'm gonna take it.
Also, go get and get Storm back. Like, Storm isn't like,
yes.
And then like what she said, like, Storm would understand what I'm going through. Like, none of you men would understand what I'm going through, but Storm would understand. Like, go find Storm.
That was a banger when she said that to Scott. Madeline Pryor, what is now Madeline Pryor. Scott didn't quite believe what was real, right? What, you know, who was who, and she takes the baby from him and tearfully says, "Storm would have believed me." Walks away. I'm like, damn, just damn, so good.
Speaking of Storm, that's how the episode ends. We end with Storm. She's at a bar in Dallas, and she meets up with a guy named Forge, who says he can help her out. Frank, what do you think is the next step in this? What happens in episode 4? Since you totally called episode 3, what happens in episode 4?
Forge will help get her powers back. Forge is an ally. He's a he is from the group X4. Well, he is one of the many incarnations of the X-Men team. He does join the X-Men. He's like a scientist
from the future.
Right. From the future. So Forge played a huge part in Cable's. I want to say he cured Cable in the future. But he is he's also a scientist who specifies in, you know, mutant DNA and immune evolution, medicines, things of that nature. There's a comic book series. Storm dates Forge for a little bit too, so I don't know that plays a part in this series, in this incarnation of the series, but they do date for a while. They actually dated before Storm met Black Panther, so I don't know if they're gonna have this play out, but yeah, he does get her powers back.
Very cool. There actually is a in the original series, there's a flash forward like future timeline that doesn't really exist where Wolverine and Storm are together. That was a very strange episode to watch that, because like they're like totally in love and then their world like doesn't exist. It's like a la The Flash, what happens in that movie. Spoilers for that.
And it's just constant like variations of like people fucking with the main timeline and just changing things up to where it affects the future. And like, and it's always somebody from the future coming back and like, oh, we gotta stop this from happening. We gotta stop the Sentinel program from happening. And like they stop that, but it affects a wrinkle where it destroys the mutant kind in the future. So, but yeah, that's one of the timelines. Wolverine Storm dated in the comic books as well on the main timeline. Storm was getting it in. Somebody, there's no shame in Storm's game. That goddess was getting it in.
Right. So right now she can't feel the moisture, but maybe she did in the pages of the comic book. Yeah. Marcy, how soon do you think we get Storm with her powers back? Do you think it's next episode? I mean, obviously this show packs in a lot of content in a short period of time. Do you think we get her powers back in next episode, or do you think it'll be in the season finale? How do you think it plays out?
I hadn't really thought of it. It would be great if she got it back the next episode, because then we could actually like see Storm have her powers throughout the rest of the season. But I think it would also be interesting to just give her some time again to like deal with the I don't have my powers, and then to be able to get them back. So I think that would be interesting. I'm glad she was in Dallas. Yay. We love you, Storm. But like the nerd part of me was like, oh, it's like 97. They're like, this is like, we're having a drought. But then I just kind of looked it up and I was like, there wasn't really a drought in Dallas in 1997. So that was kind of like a little, I was like, oh, like they could have done a little bit more research, but we did have some pretty hot days. So like nerd part of me was like, let me fact check. the weather in summer 1997 Dallas.
I like Marcy going to the Farmer's Almanac to find out what the weather was in 1997 to be like, oh, you didn't do it right. You're wrong. It wasn't that bad.
Oh, Farmer's Almanac. I mean, it's still
pretty bad, but we did get a decent amount of precipitation, but there were some stretches in July, so it could have been July 1997. This is all taking place.
I just like how quickly she's traveling across the country, because the X mansion is like in New York, correct, Frank? Like it's kind of.
Yeah. It is.
So she's been on the bus, like making her way southwest. Interesting. Brittany, what are your thoughts on how this ended with Storm, and what do you think we see in the future?
Definitely love the cliffhanger. We haven't forgotten about Storm and her particular storyline for this series. And I'm going to echo what Christian is saying here. I think either halfway through the series or maybe at the very end of the series, not series, what am I saying? Season. Sorry, y'all. I meant to say season, not series. The end of the season or mid-season, she will be able to get her powers back with the help of Forge. However, I did like what Raheeb in our previous pod had said about Storm navigating and finding out how to be a hero without her powers. And I think that'd just be kind of cool to see, and how she's able to pivot if she can. I mean, I know her powers are so specific to like the environment and those sources. But I don't know. I do want to see kind of her have like a personal growth, because I think she felt some type of way about being human as opposed to being a mutant. So I think just that would be really interesting to see. But yeah, your girl's gonna definitely get her powers back. Obviously Frank has kind of spoiled that for us, but I'm interested to see just how she is going to get her powers back. Like what steps are going to be taken in order for that to happen. But I'm going to say either mid-season or close to the end of the season.
I mean, hopefully it's soon. So like 1997 Dallas in this universe will like have their drought in, and she can like make it rain. So
we shall see. Frank, I want to give you kind of the last word on this. Well, first off, is there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention from this episode?
Yeah, I kind of want to touch on, like, I know in our first podcast I mentioned how I was surprised to see Bishop in this series.
Yep.
And I wanted to kind of like hopefully get on a flashback or get an understanding of why Bishop was still there. And it kind of closed up quickly, like Bishop was leaving. So it's like, because like he wasn't there in the finale of the original series, and he had left seasons before. So to see that Bishop was there, and now that he's gone, I guess that character placement played a purpose of bringing Cable back into the future. And to put respect on Cable's name, a lot of people don't understand who Cable is and how powerful he is. People know Josh Brolin played him in the Deadpool movie and all that, but Cable, like his mother, is a telekinesis, telepathic. He's defeated Iron Man. He's defeated Captain America. He's defeated Wolverine. Like, he is one of the coldest fighters, military training, superhuman strength, super intellect. He's one of the most powerful beings in the Marvel universe. So I'm sure we'll see Cable sometime, if not this season, next season, in some future storyline. But he is a cold motherfucker, man, and just know that dude is nothing to be fucked with.
Do you think, Frank, that this will be the last we'll see of Bishop in this season?
No, I don't think so. I think any X-Men series that we get, whether it's a cartoon or a movie, you're going to get a storyline of the future, because a big part of the mutant plight, human plight, is what happens in the future of the destructions of mutants and humans. Mm-hmm. And Bishop and Cable and all those characters in said future play a major part of hope stabilizing the conflict between mutants and humans. But like, as you see in the main timeline, their life's work is to make sure the mutant and human conflict does not affect the ending of the world. So no, I feel like we'll see Bishop, Cable, and possibly Apocalypse. I mean, we've seen Sinister already in 3 episodes, so yeah. I'm sure we'll see Apocalypse. I'm sure we'll see, you know, Cable and Bishop and some other future people as well.
It'd just be really messed up if they bring Bishop into this the series and then it's like, bye. And that's it. You know, that's just really, like, really, really messed up if that were to be the case. I'm with you. I don't believe this is the last we'll see of Bishop. And I mean, how quickly we'll get to see Cable, and again, remains to be seen. But yeah, I've got hopes that we'll see Bishop and give him a little bit more of a storyline outside of just serving as a vehicle to take Nathan to the future. Like, that's just, like, there needs to be more.
Yeah. And there's been theories to say that Bishop knows who the baby is, because he goes back and forth. But again, like, with future rules, you can't just play like, hey, your baby is the key to the future. Like, you can't tell the parents that, because it could affect the timeline. So I mean, there's been theories to say that Bishop might know who Nathan Summer really is. So, because Cable and Bishop crossed paths in the original series too.
That could not be me. I would totally be like, guess what? Like, I couldn't do that.
Marcy's that girl at work where she's told something really important not to tell anyone, but then she like walks over to her work bestie. It's like, guess what I know. I love it. I'm the same person. It's fine.
You know, we're talking about, you know, the storylines that are going to continue, and some stuff I'd like to see. Maybe, like, there are some characters that have kind of been in the background that I wonder if we're going to get, like, more focus on them. Like Beast. I mean, Beast has played a part, but he's kind of in the background. Jubilee is, like, almost, like, invisible. Like, she was in the first episode, and, like, I don't know that she's really had much to do.
She's going to have, I think, a more episode focused. She will be the focus.
Okay.
Tomorrow's episode. At time of recording, it'll be tomorrow's episode.
Oh wow. Okay. I didn't realize. I was trying to think of other characters that aren't really getting much shine, and she hasn't really gotten the spotlight. So that makes sense. Marcy, are there any other characters, I mean, besides like Storm's return and the love triangle we talked about before, are there other characters that you would like to see kind of maybe be brought to the forefront of the story?
I would like to see more Gambit and Rogue and see like how that plays out a bit. And like you guys were saying, I would like to see a little bit more of Beast, because I think he's interesting and I think they could give him interesting storylines. So that's who I would want to see. And then more of Morph, again, just more of like backstory, more just kind of like in depth. But also I love the way that he's able to just kind of fuck with everybody, and also like how he like pokes at Gambit, and just kind of I like the duality of like he can like be this jokester, but then also he's dealing and processing with a lot of things.
And he's in love with Wolverine, which I think that's going to become something more in this season. You know, the thing about this show that's really, I think, really interesting is like there isn't just like an A plot and a B plot. There's like so many like every character could go so many different ways and so many storylines. It's just like it's really interesting to see like what's gonna come next. And I honestly can't wait to see what happens in the next episode. Frank, any final predictions before we get out of here?
Man, I don't see that's the thing. Like, even though I know like all the stories, I don't know which way they're gonna go with it.
Right.
I think Apocalypse shows up. I don't know when. I'm not saying next episode, but we've seen Bishop, we've seen a Cable Easter egg. I think Apocalypse is gonna be the main villain in this season 6, I think.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Brittany, you have any final words before we sign off here?
Yeah, we totally like glossed over the Brazilian guy, Sunspot, whatever his name is. Briefly featured in this episode, he too had the nightmarish illusion of his mother coming out of the TV, and just like that was twisted, of course. So, you know, curious to see if he's long for this world or not. But because listen, you piss off your mama. My God. But anyway, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like I said, because I've looked it up, Jubilee is going to have a little bit more screen time for the next episode. And I'm curious to see which direction all of this will lead to. I have no knowledge of the storylines because I haven't read the comics. I'm taking it for what it is. And I would be curious to see if we will be visited again by Madeline Pryor, if we will ever get a hint that Charles Xavier is coming back, and if Magneto is really as good as he claims to be. Also, give me more Gambit. Give me more Gambit in the crop top. Like, just give it. Give.
Just like what I was saying, there's so many characters and so many interesting angles that they can pursue, and I think they're going to pursue almost all of them. You know, like, and they've we know we're getting a season 2 of this, so wow, there's some really good stuff on the way.
I have to read this quote from Christian in here in the comments. Jean Grey actually left, and Madeline Pryor stayed behind and switched places on purpose. Parent trap shit. Mind blown. Love it.
Exactly.
Love it.
I bet you there's a side of Cyclops that's like, oh my God, this bitch is back, man. I already got a fight.
He's like, let's get it.
My love's affection with this six clawed freak motherfucker Wolverine. Like, because you know, there was no like, oh, I'm tempted by Wolverine with Madeline Pryor. Like, she was all about Scott. There was no like, I'm monogamous. I ain't getting no flirty signs. I'm not really Wolverine's mom. I'm not flirting with him. Like, you know, Jean Grey's torn, and she's been torn from the jump. Regarding Wolverine and Cyclops, which is, I never understood that love triangle, because Wolverine came to the X-Men just so late in their duration of the X-Men. Like, Scott and Jean are original members, and like their life was not perfect, but like they were happy. And as soon as Wolverine shows up with fragment memories of like his past life, Jean just has had an affinity for him, and is like. And like the show did a great job of like showing that when Wolverine's like, hey, we read my mind. Like, oh my God, I mean that much to you? Of course, motherfucker, you knew this. What you mean? Oh my God, I mean that much to you. You've known this for 5 fucking years on the previous show. So that was.
I'm just gonna say it. And no disrespect to those who have been in long term relationships, myself included. There comes a time, I'm sure, that you know. One or the other is going to get curious, like, what else is out there for me? Like, you know, kind of just try new things, have fun. I don't know. Like, not saying, you know, be disloyal or anything like that. I'm not saying that at all, Scott Summers, but I'm saying just like, I can understand. I can understand. I can understand.
It's the 90s. We're empowered.
Yes.
And again, we don't know when they were switched, when the Jean Greys were switched. So,
yeah,
may have been in season 3 or 4 or something. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So he's been with the clone for a while. I don't know. Hopefully we'll find that out. That'll be interesting to see if that's the case.
At least for 9 months, we know he's been with the clone. At least.
So. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yes. That's very good point, Frank. Good job with the math of that.
Oh my God.
They will fuck it.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. There's no way I can top that. So now that you know what we think about episode 3 of X-Men I-7, we want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people tell us?
Oh man. So we always encourage everyone to join us in our live chats. As you can see here in this one, if you're watching the replay, we have a great time talking with our audience. Christian has just like been giving us his thoughts and questions, what have you. I'm actually going to read one right here. If she is a clone, wouldn't she be a virgin? Wouldn't Scott, know something was different?
Maybe that one liked her.
Oh, gosh.
I have a comment to that, but I'm not going to put it here online. Christian, I'll text you about that. Anyway, so we do encourage everyone to join us here in the live chat because it just makes things much more interesting. So do that. But also don't forget to subscribe to this YouTube channel. We are on the road to 300 subscribers. We're just 5 subscribers away from that, y'all. It was our goal to get that by the end of 2023, but alas, we weren't able to meet that. But help us get to that goal regardless. So be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button as well for this pod review if you enjoyed it, and don't forget to hit that notification bell, that way you know the next time we will do a live, which actually, Justin, at time of recording, is going to be tomorrow.
I'm sorry, our private chat is so funny. Like
I'm not reading it right now.
Sorry.
I'm trying to be professional.
Yes, we'll be back tomorrow with a special episode. Yes, Brittany, we'll be back.
Yeah. So we'll be back with an episode. Good Lord. I need new co-host people. I'm still not looking at the private chat. Anyway, but you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads, all at Watchers Basement. My goodness, y'all, get it together. Get it together. We are available, like I said, all on social media. You can also use the hashtag Watchers Basement when talking about us. Help us grow our audience that way. Send us memes, send us articles, send us things that you want us to check out. We'll add it to the ever-growing list. And lastly, if you guys are not into video podcasts, we have got you hooked up with audio podcasts available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating.
Yes, please do that. We appreciate it. So thank you, Brittany. So for Brittany, for Marcy, and for Frank, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a good night. Thanks. Bye-bye.